Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to this 52nd episode of Step Into the Light on this Tuesday morning, May 9th. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through the manner in which they live their lives, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Do you have children? Are they healthy? It is every mom's nightmare to discover something is seriously wrong with your child medically. Imagine putting your happy, healthy infant son to bed one night, only to wake in the morning and find something is terribly wrong, something that a trip to a clinic or even the emergency room can't fix, and medication won't remedy the problem either. My guest today, Abby Banks, shares the story of her then 7-month-old son, Wyatt, diagnosed with transverse myelitis. This rare autoimmune disease attacked Wyatt's spinal cord, leaving him paralyzed, wheelchair-bound, and facing years of rehabilitation. Abby is a mom of three and an author and special needs advocate. She is a speech and communications summa cum laude graduate from Clemson University. Abby's passion is to find God in the hard places. Her book, Love Him Anyway, chronicles the heartbreak and hope of a family forced into the fray of a fight they never expected to encounter. Good morning and welcome to the show, Abby.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's just a delight to have you, Abby. As you know, I got to read your book and I found it absolutely amazing. Your whole story is is amazing. Excuse me, I don't know what's the matter with me this morning. I seem to have a terrible frog in my throat. Goodness. Anyway, Abby, I'd like to begin at the beginning. When you found out that you were pregnant with Wyatt, that was quite a shock for you and your family. Can you tell us what was going on there?
Yes, we were one of the many couples who struggled with infertility. It's not something that my husband and I expected to be part of our story, but it was. And we had a lot of trouble getting pregnant with our first, my son Jay, and then my daughter Austin. Again, we struggled to get pregnant with her and needed, you know, medical intervention to get pregnant. So we never expected to be able to have a child on our own, and Wyatt was just this little surprise that we never expected, that God gave us a gift without needing medicine to get. So he was such a surprise and a blessing to us.
I guess so. My goodness. And I know I didn't really address this in our topics today, but I know you guys were going through a lot of struggles of your own before you even found out that you were pregnant with Wyatt. I won't go into that a lot because I want to save some stuff for the people that read the book.
Yes.
But, but
we
have
definitely
been through
our share of struggles. Yeah.
My
husband's mother had Alzheimer's and was had a bowel obstruction the day my daughter was born and came home from the hospital. She was very sick, so we had to move in to help take care of her. Then my husband had his own issues, a couple surgeries right before we found out we were pregnant with Wyatt. My husband had just come home from the hospital the day before I found out I was pregnant with Wyatt. We'd been in the hospital with him for 10 days, and, you know, I just mistaked sickness and tired for hospital yuck, but that's
sure.
Not what it was. So.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you had Wyatt. He's 7 months old now. Put him to bed one night. Take us through the signs that made you realize something was not right. And, of course, a mom, she has an extra sense about that. But what was it that told you something's weird here?
Well, we were kind of going through another crazy thing right when Wyatt got sick. I had thyroid cancer, just had my thyroid out a few days before and had just come home from the hospital, still had a drain in my neck, and wasn't fully taking care of the kids myself at this point. My husband was helping me a lot. That evening that Wyatt got sick, he was fussy. We couldn't explain exactly what was going on. He threw up a little bit that evening, and our family had just been through an awful stomach virus the week before. My sister-in-law had been watching Wyatt during my surgery and while I was in the hospital, and she was actually supposed to have him that night, but her family had gotten that stomach virus. So all our kids came back home, and, you know, we just assumed Wyatt was getting that stomach virus that everybody else had been running through. So he threw up that night, and he was just really whiny and whimpering, and he looked like he was, you know, taking real deep breaths. I mean, something was uncomfortable. You could kind of tell that something wasn't comfortable, but, you know, nothing, you know, he didn't have a high fever or anything that made us worry a ton. My
right.
husband was a little concerned, you know, looking at him, because he felt like since I was sick and still trying to recover, he was kind of responsible for them, and he was just worried about Wyatt sleeping on the other end of the house that night by himself. So we brought Wyatt, brought the changing pad and put him in between my husband and I in our big bed, just so we could keep an eye on him that night. And he whimpered a lot that night, but it wasn't a big hard cry. Now I know mm-hmm. that he couldn't get a hard cry out. Didn't know it then. But he finally did, you know, drift off and went to sleep. But it was that next morning when we realized that, you know, something much greater was going on. I picked him up to try to get him ready and just start the day. And I sat him on my knees. You know, kids will, you put their feet on your legs and they'll kind of bounce. And, you know,
right.
that's what Wyatt would do, kind of jump. He was 7 months old. He wasn't walking yet, but he was sitting up on his own. We could put him in a bouncer or a jumper and, you know, surely bear his own weight. So I went to sit him on my knee, and his legs just buckled like little noodles. And I didn't, you know, my brain didn't go towards, you know, major something wrong. I didn't, you know, I didn't know about any kind of paralysis or have any idea what was coming down the road. But my first thought was, he's so exhausted, he doesn't want to stand. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
what I thought. And I told my husband, I was like, oh gosh, look how tired he is. He doesn't want to stand. And I remembered couple weeks, you know, when I had the stomach virus, I was exhausted, you know, I didn't want to do anything. So I just assumed, you know, this virus is making him feel really bad. But we made him a doctor's appointment, because I had a doctor's appointment that morning to get the drain out of my neck. And then I made an appointment for him at his pediatrician right after that, just because, you know, we could tell something was going on, but at the time we didn't, you know what it was. So got him dressed and got him ready and buckled him into his infant carrier and went off to my doctor's appointment. And by the time we got done my doctor's appointment, got him out of the car seat at his doctor's appointment, he was like a bag of potatoes at that point. He was just like a rag doll, just completely limp. And we knew then that something major was going on. You know, we didn't have any idea exactly what it was, but you know, we knew that something was going on. Pediatrician came in, looked at him, went and got another pediatrician, came back and, you know, said, you need to take Kim to the emergency room now. You know, we're not sure what's going on, but he needs to go there now. So
mm-hmm.
that's kind of how it all started with us.
Goodness. So you discovered after a period of time his diagnosis. And in the book, I know you said that you just kind of prayed for God to just fix this. How did you feel when you realized that that was not going to happen?
Now, that was a hard thing. You know, we sat in that, he ended up in the ICU several days later at a different hospital when we got the diagnosis. And, you know, she told us that his neurologist told us, you know, there's no cure for this. We're going to give him some treatments and hope for the best, but, you know, there's no cure, and we don't know if he's ever going to get better. And, you know, I just would go into his room, and I put my hand on his chest, and I was, you know, praying that God would let him touch the hem of his garment. You know, that's what I wanted. I just wanted that
mm-hmm.
instant healing. We started the medications, and it became obvious to us, you know, we thought, you know, we'd get the medicine, and, you know, all of a sudden he'd be up and moving, because some people with transverse myelitis do get better, and some don't, but we didn't, you know, he started to get his arms back, so, you know, we had little bits and pieces of hope right there at the beginning. His breathing got stronger, we got his arms back, but then it's sort of like that progression just stopped, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, God gave me a peace about it, but I was really selfish. I didn't want a peace. I didn't want God giving me peace. I wanted him to make my son better.
Sure.
That's what I wanted. You know, so that when I felt that peace, it was kind of like, no, I don't want peace that it's going to be okay. I want you to make him better.
Mm-hmm.
So that
mm-hmm.
that was definitely a difficult struggle for me as a mom, because, you know, I could say in that moment that I wanted, you know, I was praying to God. I'm like, God, if you heal him, I'm going to tell everybody how awesome you are. I'm just going to share your story, and I'm going to bring glory to you through it. And I would have, but in those moments, it wasn't about bringing glory to the Father. It was about what was easiest for my son. You know, I wanted him to have the best road possible. But the more that it became a reality that we were in this for the long haul, the more that I just had to lean into God and go, okay, you know, I don't have this. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to trust that somehow you're going to teach me or show me or put the people in my path that are going to show me what I'm supposed to do.
There's got to be a huge element, Abby, of fear and uncertainty, you know, in all that. I know, excuse me, again, I can't hardly talk today. I know that this isn't near comparable, but my husband dealt with a lot of medical issues. Here, I had a nursing background, but my nursing background was in psychiatry. So when he came home with a wound back and a wound that needed to be treated every day and all this stuff, I mean, you talk about being, you know, 10,000 miles out of your comfort zone. There I was. So I can almost begin to empathize somewhat with what you must have been going through with that fear of, oh my goodness, you know, this is my son and he's going to need all this special care. And am I the one who's going to be able to do that? So, and I think you brought that across very well in the book.
Yeah, it definitely was. Fear will paralyze us. Fear will absolutely like strip away everything from us if we let it consume us. And I definitely had that fear in the beginning, not knowing what was going on. But we had great nurses and great doctors who were teachers and who have become friends and made sure that when we left the hospital, you know, we knew what was going on with Wyatt and how to care for him, which is a big thing. You know, as a mama, especially child number three, you know, I thought I knew what I was doing by then. And then all of a sudden I came home from the hospital with a child that I didn't even know, you know, I didn't even know how to comfort him because I didn't know what he could feel, you know. Can't rub your back. How do you feel when I'm cradling you if you can't feel? And just so worried that, you know, if he were to stop breathing and I don't know how to do this thing and I don't know what to do next, and just really getting past that and just doing the hard stuff day by day and really just learning to do whatever was next, whatever that meant, whatever that looked like, and trying to not let myself get wrapped up in what might come next.
Yes, exactly. You just had to take it day by day, and probably hour by hour, actually.
It was. I mean, some days the next thing was like getting out of bed, and that's what I had to do.
Exactly. And then I know, well, you said you had dealt with some medical issues and, you know, there was other stuff going on in your life at the same time. You said your mother-in-law was having her issues and, you know, it wasn't like this was the only thing on your plate at the time.
But we've been blessed with family and friends who were able to support us and help us in each step of the way. And we definitely couldn't have done it without additional support.
Now, I'm curious to know, too, Abby, what kind of a physical environment were you in as far as being anywhere near good medical help?
Well,
are you
we're
in a very
blessed,
decent-sized town, or are you in a little tiny town in the middle of nowhere like I am out here?
we're in a smaller town, and we did have to, for his acute care, we went to our regional hospital first. He was there for 3 days. They weren't sure what was going on with him. We were transferred to Children's Hospital in Greenville. He was there for 2 weeks, and they are great. We're very blessed to have a lot of care there. He's got a pulmonologist and a neurologist and a urologist and, you know, sleep medicine. Everybody's all together. So that's a good blessing for us to have that close. And we're also, you know, part of the Shriners Hospital family. We do a lot with Shriners Hospitals. That's where he did his rehab. So they're in Philadelphia is where the spinal cord injury unit is. So that's where we did our first rehab, was in Philadelphia. There is a Shriners Hospital in Greenville that we go to for some of our orthopedic needs. We do our physical therapy there. And the team from Philadelphia actually comes down to Greenville a couple times a year, so we're able to see them there. And we also did several stints of rehab at the Kennedy Krieger Institute in Baltimore, which is where the International Center for Spinal Cord Injury is. So we did some rehab there as well. So we've definitely been up and down the East Coast, but compared to some people, I mean, the healthcare that we have within reach for us is such a blessing, and we definitely do not take it for granted.
Good, good. Yeah, I just wondered, because when my husband was going through all his stuff, our closest, the hospital that we were dealing with was 120 miles away. So
yeah, we're about 45 minutes to an hour to get to our children's hospital or the Shriners in Greenville, which is where we're at most of the time. And then we're back and forth to Philadelphia several times a year.
Very good. Well, you're obviously, from what I read in your story, you are a family of a very strong faith, and this was a part of the fabric of your family before Wyatt came along. How did this diagnosis affect that relationship with God? Were there times when you just felt like really angry, maybe even betrayed?
You know, I know a lot of people go through that emotion, but that's just not something that I ever had to deal with. And I think it's completely mm-hmm. normal if people do, but that's just not where I was. You know, for me, you know, I've always had a strong faith, but I've never had to live it where I just put everything to God and said, you know what, I can't do it. You know, I did a lot of stuff through my own power, I think, in life, and I thought I was doing it through God, but it wasn't. It was, you know, I was always trying to have my hands in and manipulate mm-hmm. things the way that I wanted it to be. And I finally got to the point where I was like, you know what? I can't do it. I don't have enough in me. You know, I think people like to tell you when you're going through a hard thing that God won't give you more than you can handle. But the truth is God always gives us more than we can handle, and he didn't mean for us to handle it. There are times we've just got to turn it all over and go, you know what? I can't. I don't know what the next step is. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I'm just going to move forward in faith and trust that when it comes, you're going to show me how to do it. You're going to give me the strength to do it, and it's going to be clear what I'm supposed to do, and just really let go of worry. Worry was my vice, and
yes.
It is still what I struggle with, is, you know, what is tomorrow going to look like? You know, I try to, you know, disguise my worry as praying and all these crazy things to try to just, you know, keep control of things. So, you know, worry is the thing that just controlled me, and I just had to let go and understand that, you know, what's going to happen tomorrow is going to happen tomorrow, whether I am consumed by it today or not, and just really learn to live in today. And that's what God showed me more than anything, is how much of life I was missing, worried about what was coming next.
Boy, Abby, you know, that is so very true. So very true, because in some situations I'm in right now, I tend to be the same way.
It's so hard to let it go. It is so hard.
Oh, most definitely, yeah. If we would just stop and realize that there are certain things that are, number one, beyond our control.
Yeah.
And that tomorrow is going to come, and it's going to bring with it whatever it brings, and no amount of worry is going to stop that.
Yeah,
so
and
I really
realized everything I was missing with Wyatt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were in rehab, and I was so worried about what was coming next. And I looked at this baby who was, you know, he wasn't worried about what was coming next. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was just excited that people were there and playing with him. And I'm worried about how he's going to college and getting to school. And I'm missing the little things that he is learning to do right now. So that's
mm-hmm.
when I just had to go, you know what? I want to be here. I want to be present in what's going on today and not wrapped up in what's coming tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a very good philosophy to have. Abby, your kids were how old? Your other Wyatt's siblings were how old when he was diagnosed?
They were 6 and 2. So my daughter Austin is only 17 months older than Wyatt. And my oldest son, Jay, he's 10 now, but he was 6 then.
You mentioned in your book that siblings are often the forgotten warriors in a special needs family. Can you speak to that a little bit, and how did you help Jay and Austin deal with what had happened to Wyatt?
Oh, Jay and Austin are such strong kiddos, and I don't get to talk about them enough. You know, you see the child who has an illness or a disability, and you look at the parents, and you think about them, but so much of Jay and Austin's world is changed because Wyatt is sick. You know, they've sacrificed a lot, you know, school sports and, you know, all these extracurricular activities and fun vacations, and mommy and daddy are away a lot, and his brother was going here, and vacations are to the Ronald McDonald House, and, you know, different things, and life just looks different for them because Wyatt is sick. But I still think that they teach me more than I could ever teach them. I mean, they love Wyatt. With the biggest heart, they don't see him as any different than anybody else. They want to defend him and love on him. And the world that they have been exposed to because of Wyatt's disability is nothing that I could not have given that to them any other way. You know, I want to teach them to trust God. I want to teach them to see all people as equal, regardless of their physical ability, you know, the color of their skin, the language they speak. And I could have told them that, but they have lived this by being around other people, by being at the Ronald McDonald House, by spending time at Shriners Hospital. They have been around such a variety of people and learned to see people as equal and not to see what people can't do. And that has been one of the biggest blessings that has come out of Wyatt's disability, is they are living lessons that I never could have taught them without Wyatt's disability.
Yeah, I know. I was going to speak to this a little bit later. The videos that you have on the Facebook page are just amazing, the interactions between Wyatt and his brother and sister. And this is a good time, I guess, to take just a short break here. I do like to make listeners aware of who they're listening to, because sometimes folks come into the show after we've started, after our introduction, and they don't know who we are, what we're talking about. So let me make listeners aware that you are listening to Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. My guest today is Abby Banks. Abby is an amazing mom in that she is mom to a young man who at 7 months old was diagnosed with transverse myelitis, which left him largely paralyzed. Wyatt is now 4. We've been talking about the process that has brought the family from that very first diagnosis up until now. Abby has a wonderful Facebook page. It's called Wyatt's Fight Against TM. Isn't that correct, Abby?
That's correct.
Yeah, and oh my goodness, you need to go to that Facebook page, folks, and check it out, because she has got the most amazing videos on there of her little boy and the rest of the family. And if you want to see something that's just going to melt your heart, you've got to go watch those videos. It's just absolutely amazing. Abby also has a Twitter account and an Instagram account, and I have a website, which is PattySheene.com. The reason I'm referring listeners to that is because all of the information about Abby that I just brought forth now is going to be listed on that website under the Blog Talk Radio tab, under website and social the website and social media page. We have information about Abby. We'll have information about all of our guests. So, also, if you care to go back and listen to the show again, or if you'd like to refer other folks to it, all of our shows are on archive, and I would recommend that you do that. So just my little bit of information there for folks that want to find out some further information. And Abby, I'm going to get with you later too, because I'm sure you have some other resource pages that I could put on that website as well for folks that may be experiencing something similar.
Oh, absolutely.
Abby has written a wonderful book called Love Him Anyway, and we'll be talking about that in a few minutes. But first I wanted to ask you, Abby, in the book you talk about some, I don't know how else to put it, except totally stupid insensitive comments that people make when they see a disabled person or a parent with a disabled child. Can you speak to what are some of the more appropriate things for, how should people react, I guess is my question, when they see someone in public who obviously has something going on like this?
Absolutely. And I will say that, I didn't know exactly what to do when I saw somebody with a disability and before
right.
Wyatt got sick. And the truth is, they want to be treated any other way and not to be noticed. But, we know that that's not the case. And people are curious. And a lot of times people want to know what's going on, what has happened, especially when you have a child. People want
yeah.
to know what happened and how did they get in this situation. And one of the typical things that people like to say is, well, what's wrong? Or was he born this way? And those are all questions that people tend to ask. But, one of the things that I've learned through being in rehab and other things is if you do have a curiosity, I mean, most of the time we don't need to know and it doesn't make a difference. But if it is someone that you feel like that you need to ask that question, the appropriate thing to ask is, may I ask you your child's diagnosis? Not what's wrong with your child or not how'd they end up in the wheelchair. But that's a much more polite way. And I've always found, though, that when people tend to ask that question, they have a story or someone that they are wanting to tell you about, or they're wanting to try to connect with you because they knew someone who had a similar situation. So, I feel like that's probably the best way to go about that if you do have a curiosity about a situation that someone is in, is to kindly ask. And it's always better not necessarily to do it in front of the child.
Yeah.
If you can, that's just something. And the kids, little kids will ask Wyatt and he answers, I'm paralyzed and it's done. He's going on. Sometimes he'll say mm-hmm. transverse myelitis. Kids will ask. They aren't scared. They just say what they say. They still think his wheelchair is neat. They want to push it. They think it's cool. So he's still at
they
the
want
point
to ride.
Where he yes, absolutely. He is not fazed by people asking him about his wheelchair. Now, I'm sure there's going to be a time as he gets older where he does not want those questions to be asked, or he'd rather just blend in with the crowd. But at this
sure.
point, it's still a novelty to his friends and the kids that are his age.
Very good. Well, I know that you had mentioned in the book that someone actually approached you and said, I wish I had I wish I had a wheelchair like that for my kid.
Yeah,
he was
in a wheelchair, and she said, that's the best idea. That's so much better than a stroller. I wish I had a wheelchair for my little girl when she was little.
Just
sometimes people say things, and you just have to let it go. Mm-hmm. Let it go.
yeah. And I think, too, it must be difficult, Abby, because I'm sure there are people that, rather than expressing compassion or concern, they express pity. And that's got to be hard.
Yeah, yeah. Why it's not sad. And I
mm-hmm.
think I talk about this in the book. Because, if I ask Wyatt, if I prayed for Wyatt at night and said, God, heal Wyatt, Wyatt would finish the prayer and look at me and say, what's wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't see himself as sick. This is who he is. For better or worse, it's the life he has, and he doesn't want people to feel sorry for them. He doesn't want people to pity him, and he is not sad by any means. So, that is definitely a reaction that some people have, and people still apologize when we're out and they hear our story. And, obviously it's not the life that we want, but we are living fuller than we ever thought we could. And I think it's part of his disability that has brought us to that realization.
You do. You define that very well in the book. You use a wonderful analogy, Abby, about, what are they called? Dandelions. And how,
yes.
As children, we think dandelions are just the coolest thing. They're beautiful and we bring them in and we make little bouquets for mom and all this,
yes.
And we don't see them as weeds. And you talk about the weeds in Wyatt's life, and he just does not see them. They're just not there for him.
No,
to
absolutely.
Him, his life is a thing of beauty. And I love that analogy that you used.
It was so funny. We were watching a commercial the other day, and you know all the lawn care commercials are on TV, and there was a commercial for like weed killer. You know, you put in a little spreader and put it out in your yard, and the guy had a green grass and a little dandelion popped up, and he was putting out weed killer. And Austin saw that commercial, and she looked at me and she said, "We are not getting that for our yard because we are not killing the flowers." And it just made me smile. I was like, you know what? You're right, sweetie. We are not getting that for our yard. You know, I think that so much of what we view as bad and good is based on other people's perspective. You know, we have this idea of what life is supposed to look like, and I'm not even sure where it comes from. Social media is really good at creating what life is supposed to look like, especially as a young mom or a young family, and you're supposed to do all these certain things, and you're supposed to look a certain way and dress a certain way, and we get this ideal in our head of what it needs to look like, and then when it's not, we think it's bad. Mm-hmm. You know, we instantly see what we're going through as wrong, and it's so hard to just look past that and say, you know what, this doesn't look like everybody else's, but it's what I got, and it's still good. You know, Austin can't tell the difference between a rose and a dandelion, and she is just as happy with either. And I want to be that way about the hard stuff in life and understanding that, you know, it may look a little different, but at the end of the day, I want to smile through it. I want to learn to celebrate in the middle of the hard stuff and understand that God's plan for me is the same at the end, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Abby, I thought it was interesting. You said you thought you related an incident in Sunday school when you said you thought at one time that God must magically equip parents of special needs children. What are your thoughts about that now?
Yeah, well, you know, you say the craziest things, but, you know, I used to remember, you know, seeing a family with a special needs child, and I used to think, God must think that you are so strong to be able to give you that child. And, you know, you're selected for that child for a reason. You must have something, you know, you can give them. And, you know, I realize now that, you know, I am not any stronger, any better equipped to be a parent of a special needs child than anybody else. It is definitely not me. It is all the grace of God that's gotten us through to where we are. And I didn't realize how much I would learn, how much I would have to stretch and push beyond all that was comfortable for me. I guess I thought that it was those people, you know, had this larger comfort zone and were able to do things. But I think that, you know, as a parent of a special needs child, you just have to let go and realize that it's going to be okay. And you're going to mess up some days. And I think your idea of perfection, it just kind of changes. It's all skewed. It doesn't look like what it used to. And you let go of all that perfectness that you were all worried about before, and understand mm-hmm. that there's not, you know, I said this to somebody the other day, you know, we have this ruler that how we're supposed to gauge our kids, and you go to a doctor's appointment, they give you a checkup, and are they on the curve, and have they done this yet, have they done this yet, and
yes.
We grade our kids by what the world thinks is normal and what they're supposed to do, but then when you have a special needs child, you got to throw out that ruler, that world's ruler, and look to the ruler and understand that he is in control. And I'm going to celebrate every milestone that my child has, if it's ahead of everybody else's, or if it's 2 years behind, or you know what, if he doesn't get to that milestone, that is okay too. We're going to celebrate what we've got today, no matter what it looks like.
Wonderful. Yeah, I agree with you. I know my granddaughter was born premature, and she was very small. She was, what, 3 pounds something. But, yeah, oh, yeah, the mm-hmm. curve was a big thing for the longest time.
Yeah.
And now I laugh. Now she's going to be 16 this summer and taller than
wow.
me. So, you know, and she takes great pride in that. Grandma, I'm
yeah,
taller than
I bet
you
so.
Now. But, yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Abby, you mentioned the Ronald McDonald House and some of the things about it, which I thought was very interesting, because my perception of the Ronald McDonald House was that it was kind of a hotel accommodation, but you describe it as much more than that. Can you tell us a little bit about what they all have to offer?
Absolutely. We love the Ronald McDonald House, and we've had several experiences with the Ronald McDonald House. You know, initially when Wyatt was in the hospital in Greenville, he was in the PICU, and we stayed in the Ronald McDonald House, Jason and I, going back and forth to the hospital. But our true experience with the Ronald McDonald House has happened in Philadelphia. So for the last 3 summers, Wyatt has spent a month in Philadelphia for outpatient rehab. So we have stayed at the Ronald McDonald House during that rehab. And the Ronald McDonald House literally just provides a home away from home for our family, for siblings, for, you know, everybody to be close to their kids. But it's more than just having a place to stay that's nice and safe and inexpensive. Is it provides a family. You know, there we were staying with this, you know, the same time with another family who was going through outpatient rehab at the same time. Our kids were able to play together. We've seen several of the same families every time we go back. There's food. You have a large kitchen. And every night at the Ronald McDonald House, they have volunteers who come in and make a meal. And, you know, you don't understand, you know, yes, it's money-saving, but the stress that it is to live in a hotel instead of the Ronald McDonald House, to try to go out in a city you're not familiar with, and to find something to eat every night is draining on the parents. But more than that, it is draining on the child who was there for rehab and recovery. So the Ronald McDonald House provides a home, and it provides a place where the kids can rest and that they can get the most out of what they're doing in therapy every day. We are so blessed to be part of it. And it's so funny that my kids, you know, if they could pick any hotel in the world, I swear they would pick the Ronald McDonald House. They get so excited. Wyatt's going back for a week, only a week this summer, for some new braces and fittings, and we can't all go. I'm going to stay home this summer, but my kids were arguing over who got to go with Daddy to hang out with Wyatt at the Ronald McDonald House because they love it so much. So we have truly been blessed by the Ronald McDonald House.
I guess that is neat because I did not realize that they had that extensive of services. I just thought it was basically a cheap place to stay.
No,
is what
no,
I thought.
They
I didn't
are,
realize they supplied, you know, meals and all that. So that is quite amazing.
Absolutely. There's activities for the kids. There's a movie room. They bring dogs in a couple times a week, therapy dogs. And they're keeping the kids busy and active. They've got volunteers who come in and cut hair once a month for people who have been there a long time. So it's really a place that really nurtures the family and allows the family to stay together while one of the kids is going through a crisis.
Oh, it sure sounds like it. Yeah, it sounds absolutely wonderful. Well, Abby, as you know, the premise of this show is to for people to share their journey from darkness to light. And you certainly have been in a dark place and have found you and your family have found your way back to light. But also, sometimes those very people are the ones that lead others from darkness to light. And you have mentioned that you have taken on the role as a special needs advocate. In what ways have you kind of reached out to others in this situation?
You know, that's one of the reasons I chose to write a book. That's one of the reasons I keep up Wyatt's Facebook page is I want to be available to that mama who just got a devastating diagnosis. I want her to understand that she's not alone, that she's been there, that other people have been there before. You know, and it's difficult to look down the road. And I'm going to be honest and tell you that when Wyatt first got diagnosed, looking down the road to today would not have made me feel better because it's not what I wanted then. You know, I didn't want my child in a wheelchair, but I did want somebody to tell me that it was going to be okay. I wanted somebody who had been there, who knew what I was going through, to let me know that I was strong enough, that my child was going to be okay, to show me where the resources were, to give me advice on what hospitals and what doctors and treatments, at least somebody who had an idea. And I found a lot of that through some social media and things like that. But as people helped me and poured into me, I knew that that's something that I wanted to do and give back and make myself available. You know, I always tell all of our doctors and nurses, you know, if there's a parent who needs somebody to talk to, you don't have to call me to give out my information, you know, just give it out, just give it out. And, you know, and I get messages from people, you know, on Facebook all the time, just telling us how much that our story has helped them. They'll ask questions about doctors and other opportunities, and it gives me a chance to give back and to share a little bit of what we've learned in our journey. You know, we're only 4 years in, which a long time ago sounded like really far away, but I know we're still in the beginning of this, and it's going to look completely different when Wyatt's a teenager, and the things that I'm going to be able to help people with and share as we work through what it's like growing up. I know a lot of people with a spinal cord injury, they don't happen as an infant. So something with us is we'll have every stage of the way kind of learning mm-hmm. how to navigate this life. And as we learn more, I definitely want to share it and be there for other families.
Yeah, and it's obvious from watching those videos, Abby, that, I mean, Wyatt is a very intelligent little guy. There's no doubt about that whatsoever.
He is. Yeah, he's got a very good vocabulary. I tell people all the time that a lot of that happened because he was in the hospital a lot, doctors and therapists and nurses. He never got talked to like a baby. But the other mm-hmm. reason is I feel like he couldn't get to things in the beginning as quickly as other children. You know, he couldn't get up across the room and run. He couldn't crawl to what he wanted. So he had to vocalize and learn to tell us what he wanted earlier than other children. So that's where a lot of that difference comes in, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's probably true. So, yeah, I mean, he will definitely be able to go to school and get an education. And
yep. He's going to be able to tell his own story. He won't need me mm-hmm. to tell it soon.
Yeah. Now, he's not in preschool yet, is he?
He is. He does go to preschool.
Oh, he is. Okay.
So, yep.
Very good.
He does. All
Very
day long.
Good.
So, he loves it. Loves it, loves it, loves it.
Oh, that is so cool. Well, I wanted to ask you, Abby, suppose someone I discovered that someone in my town, for example, someone that I knew, was in this situation. What are the best ways that friends can be supportive of a parent who has a special needs child, or even anyone who has a person with a disability in their home? Did you have people that supplied meals for you, that came in and maybe did some housework for you? What was the best way that people could be of assistance to you?
I think really in this day and age, we tend to want to text people or shoot them a Facebook message. And I think that, you know, when somebody's going through a crisis, it makes a big difference when you actually show up, when you make yourself mm-hmm. available, when you actually pick up the phone and make that phone call. And instead of simply saying, let me know if you need anything, be intentional about what you would like to offer. And they may not need it. But if you say, could I bring you dinner on Thursday night? They may say, no, we're at doctor's appointments all day, but I would really love it if you could bring it on Monday. Whereas if you say, yeah. let me know if you need anything, a lot of people aren't going to say, bring me dinner on Monday night. Or if you said, could I take your older children to the movie with us? Or do you have anything I need to pick up at the grocery store? Or do you need your grass cut? You know, the answer may be no, but if you're intentional about offering something, you're much more likely to find out what that family really needs because they see that you are genuine about offering help to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's very true because I know going through the situation of my husband's funeral and all that, I mean, there were people that there was one person that said, what do you need? And I told him, I said, I need drinks, you know, and this person supplied a huge cooler full of ice and water and pop for, you know, 3 or 4 days. And man, I mean, that was wonderful because I would never have thought to call somebody and say, would you bring me some water and some pop and some ice, please? You know?
Absolutely. You know, what's funny is we had somebody just randomly show up one day and they had a case of mayonnaise and you're like, well, you know, that's what they gave us. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, we definitely used it. But I just, it's one of those things, just showing that you care and being genuine and showing that you're actually available to do it, because it is definitely hard to ask help. And I tell Jason all the time, you know, we didn't need any help, but it sure would have been nice to have this or this or this. You know, mm-hmm. we can make it all work, but it makes it so much easier if you've got those people who are willing to help or willing to, you know, willing to step in and fill those gaps.
Exactly. Yeah, I had people that brought in all kinds of paper goods, which was wonderful too.
Right,
you
don't
know,
have to wash
because,
plates, right? Awesome.
Exactly, and not only that, but it's something that you don't have to run to the store and go buy. You know,
absolutely.
You have a group
you forget
of people
all the things
and,
that you need when you get busy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, Abby, there's been so many things that are in your book that we didn't even begin to touch on, and I did that for a reason because I didn't want to give away all of the little treasures that are in your book. But I would like to recommend to listeners to check out Love Him Anyway. Abby, could you tell us where the book can be purchased?
Yes, you could find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You could actually go through and find it on Wyatt's website or my website. It's fightlikewyatt.com. And if anybody's local and to me in Greenwood, there's McCaslin's Bookstore in Greenwood for anybody who's local. But you know, for anybody who's not, the Amazon and the Barnes & Noble are probably your easiest way to get it.
Okay. Okay. Well, yeah, for our listeners, it was an absolutely wonderful book. And it not only takes a reader through all of the physical mechanics of what happened, but it also takes the reader through the spiritual growth and the spiritual battles of this family. And I thought it was a wonderfully written book, and it just really touched my heart. That's for sure.
Oh,
Abby,
so
I hate
much.
To say this, but we're about out of time. However, is there anything else that you would like to add before we do say goodbye?
I just want to say, you know, if you've got a life that doesn't look like you planned, that, you know, that doesn't mean that it's not good. And there can be goodness in the hard times. And I think that's what we've learned more than anything else, is to look for the good in the life that we didn't plan. And I think if you can just hold on to that and try to find the good in every moment and find something to celebrate and to give thanks for, that you're going to be able to see the purpose in whatever pain you're going through.
Well, thank you so much for that, Abby. And it's been a pure delight having you on the show this morning. I knew it would be because your story is
thank
just so...
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed speaking with you.
So amazing. Well, I've enjoyed it immensely, too, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. And thank and God bless you and your family.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Okay. Goodbye now. Listeners, I would like to again urge you to check out the information that I will have on the website and social media page for Abby, especially if you are in a situation or you know who is, someone who is in a situation with a disabled child. Her story is just quite amazing. In closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. May God bless you this week. We will see you again next week, Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock Mountain Daylight Time. God bless you. Thank you for listening.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a glare.